A day draws to an end and we watch you collect your belongings. We hide our emotions by painting smiles upon our faces. It's what we do best. Everything is fine. It's just an ordinary dismissal.
Hi, I'm Amy Dunstan and I'm one of the assistant heads at Birchwood Special School in Melton Mowbray.
Hi, I'm Robbie Hesketh and I'm one of the teachers in the autism provision at Birchwood School in Melton Mowbray.
And I'm Rosalind Hopkins, head teacher. Welcome to our first podcast where we explore the world of special education during the coronavirus pandemic. I think the right place to start seems to be the weeks leading up to the announcement that school would close, but not close entirely. It was the beginning of a very confusing and immensely stressful period of time for everybody. We all knew we were heading into such uncharted waters.
Yeah, it's just really strange, Ros, you talking straight away about that initial week, that it already feels like such a long time ago. It's really interesting just trying to reflect and bring back to the memory that week and the week prior to the schools closing, or closing for the majority of young people. It just seemed like a really long time ago, which just highlights what a massive journey this has been.
Yeah, it's certainly been a journey. What about you, Robbie?
Yeah, it's my memory's not the best. I think it was such a long time ago, but it was such a strange and surreal experience going through it. And it almost felt like it was film-like in a sense, that we're going through something that was, yeah, so a film, even a film wouldn't even be able to put it into words or into picture. It was a very strange time.
Yeah, it felt like we were living through some kind of sci-fi.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think the first really strong memory I've got is the week before the government announcement about the partial school closure. I'd had the usual sort of crazy Saturday morning where I'm rushing around getting the older two ready for their clubs. And the day normally started with swimming and then football training. We were running really, really late, like to the point where you think, I'm running so late today, is it actually worth us going to this 30-minute swimming lesson? I'd managed to bundle the oldest one into the car and was giving him a bit of a lecture about how we need to be more organised, you know, the usual parent stuff. And I got a phone call from a friend. She'd taken a phone call from a friend who is a doctor in Italy, who had described the situation in the hospitals there and how there was this general feeling that they'd acted a little bit too late. Because of that, they were being hit really badly by the virus. And unfortunately, the phone call was on loudspeaker because we were in the car. So my son heard the whole thing. And we just kind of looked at each other and said, no, we're not going. And so I think that was the first moment when you got this sense that the usual routine, everything that you struggle through the week to do and creates that kind of structure to your life, was coming to an end, or that it was going to change. My memory skips on to driving into work that week, and it was a day where it was quite sunny. That morning, I just thought to myself, is this safe? And then it all just seemed to very, very quickly escalate to the point where there was a announcement that they were closing the pubs and restaurants. And then I think the same week that they were closing the pubs and restaurants, I went over to the other site, Birchwood Vale, and I was chatting to people in the staff room, and they're all sort of sat next to each other. And we kind of joked, well, you can't get together in the pub later, but we're all sat here together in the staff room. And we're kind of laughing about it, but there was this sort of nervous laughter, as if, yeah, it's crazy that pubs and restaurants are closed, but we're all still here together. In my head, I had this sense of impending doom, that something massive was about to happen that was really going to change things.
Yeah, the government released a few things on that Sunday before they kind of shut all the schools. And it was by the Tuesday there was talk of it, schools closing on the Monday. And it was just a strange thing, because you didn't think it was going to happen. You didn't think it was actually going to be the case. And if anything, I think I was getting ready and getting the work all sorted for just 2 weeks. And it was going to be 2 weeks, and then it was going to be Easter, and then it'd be, so they'd do it over to Easter and be 4 weeks off, and then we're back to normal. And I think the longer it's gone on, the stranger it has become. But that initial sort of finding out of they're going to close the school, I never thought that would be the case. I thought they'd find some kind of miracle vaccine really quickly that it would just be, I'll take some paracetamol and be okay. It was like I say, just a sci-fi film. It was bizarre.
Interesting you saying, in terms of, we didn't imagine that they would close the school. And that's what I really remember feeling, is in other parts of our lives, people were starting to become really cautious. So they were, you know, pubs were closing. In sort of my personal life, I was beginning to really take stock of what was happening and what was happening globally. So watching on the news and being aware of this huge thing that undoubtedly was going to come to the UK and an impact on all of us. But I think a really strange thing happened where and it was almost fueled by the media and by the announcements that schools were a safe place. So I think we carried on coming like we were coming to this protected bubble. And like you said, Roz, people still sitting, and I know, you know, people still sitting very close to one another, whereas outside of school, we'd already started to think about that. And just saying it again now, I realise how ridiculous it is in a sense, because of course we couldn't guarantee that schools were a safe place. Precautions needed to be put in place in order to make them so. But I think we had all thought, well, schools won't close because the schools were a safe place. And then, of course, it became clear that other schools in other parts of the world were closing. And in terms of managing and getting on top of that spread of the virus, it was really important that happened at the right time, or that could be very much argued in terms of timings. But I think what you talk about, Robbie, is we never thought it would happen was because for a little while we all got into this mindset that school was a safe place from the virus. At Birchwood, we've become to see school as that place that we love coming to, that we're so passionate about, whereas actually something was coming into our school that we couldn't control and that we couldn't protect our young people and indeed our staff from. And that was really disarming, that recognition that of course it isn't that protected bubble that perhaps we'd all lured ourselves into thinking it was.
Yeah, and I think as we all got to know a little bit more about the virus and there was all that, a lot more hand washing going on, you know, that was the first set of advice, was just make sure you're washing your hands all the time and just that being really, really careful. I think I'd come to this conclusion that actually I couldn't keep you guys safe. I couldn't keep some of our very vulnerable children safe. And this inevitable sense that I'm going to have to do something that is completely contrary to everything that I'd ever want to do.
Yeah.
It's not like I wanted to close the school, but I thought that's what we're going to have to do to keep it safe. And that was a really difficult idea in itself. But then when the announcement came that schools would close, except for vulnerable children and those with an education healthcare plan, it was that last bit of that announcement. That how is it safe or safer for us than it is for the others? And then there was just no clarity around that. Hang on, what does this mean for special education? What does this mean for our most vulnerable children? And I knew that some parents had already made the decision to keep their children off because they felt that it was unsafe. They'd voted on their feet quite early on. But I also knew that for some families, this prospect was a really difficult one to imagine. And it created a real crisis within our community. The idea they wouldn't be coming to school weighted against the fact that it wouldn't be safe to come to school. So then I think as a special school community, we were left really to decide who would be coming to school and who wouldn't be coming to school. And it became like this selection process of, is your parent a key worker? Is there any other reason why this child should come to school? And just looking through we did a survey and then looking through those parental responses and reading some of what can only be described as quite heartbreaking accounts of why that they felt their child should be coming to school and having to rationalise who was going to come and who needed to come. It felt like an impossible situation. How could you make that as an inclusive environment? How could we say that one family's need was lesser or greater than the others? I mean, during that time, I am just so grateful for the team that we had around us in terms of our teaching staff and senior leadership team and all the support staff, because it was through the conversations I had with the team that it made me realise I've got to prioritise the safety and the health first and foremost. And, you know, I think, Amy, you and I had some pretty robust conversations, didn't we, about this virus is really, really contagious and it's really, really dangerous for people within the community. And that's the bit we need to remember within our decision making.
Yeah, I think just you reflecting on it then, Roz, thinking back to that, to the announcement that you've made reference to about the schools closing, and then that add-on at the end about the education healthcare plans, and what a shock that was, and processing that. And I think it felt really strange that we were, that you were sat as a school leader around a television listening to information that was going out to the masses, you know, to the public, before obviously there'd been any robust consultation with school leaders and a representation of school leaders about the impact and about how that would be managed and what that would look like, that you were hearing the information, expected to respond to that in the there and then, almost like, and I think our families looking to us to respond to it, because almost presuming that you knew that information some time ago and you had had chance to formulate some sort of a plan. And it's almost like there being an announcement that there's going to be a new way to perform a surgery, and that the surgeons are sat watching that on television, hearing about this, a new way of doing a piece of surgery, before actually any of the surgeons being in consultation about that, and whether that was...
I don't think I've ever thought about it appropriate, that way.
But it was that we were sat listening to something that had gone out, that perhaps the most important people being the leaders of the school, that have got a real understanding of our young people, of the communities in which they work, that you were placed in this position. And I know if I had have been a parent at home and not in that room with you, I would have presumed that there had been some sort of consultation and that it had been agreed in some way that these were the key groups of people. But it was just, and then, like you said, going into this process of us then needing to decide, because we'd got, because the government guidelines had said that we were in effect going to have every young person in school, and us knowing that absolutely that was not okay, and in fact by their very needs of that education healthcare plan, that H within there to do with health, that we'd got young people with some really complex health needs, and this add online, it was petrifying. And that process of deciding which young people we were going to offer school placement to was completely unenviable. It wasn't easy.
What did it feel like for you in the classroom with the kids, Robbie, at that time?
Yeah, surreal, really. Quite quickly, I think it was about 2 weeks before the school was closed, we had a few parents shielding the children. And the numbers gradually went down. And it was the calls that I was getting from parents that were really difficult, because I think they had a lot of questions to ask. And it was questions I couldn't answer. I had no answer for them. I don't think anybody did. I mean, I've said it from the start. There's no right or wrong through this. It's just what your gut instinct tells you. And I think it was really difficult to sort of explain to them that that's the decision you're going to have to make. And if you want to send your child, it was like I said, no right or wrong. And we supported them from the start, which I think was really lovely. And it's created a really sort of community feel. And they were so supportive of us coming into class, and they have been since the start. But it is so difficult to think how long you've not seen them for, and what support you can offer from afar. And in that point of that week, it was the students were asking so many questions as well. And again, it's for students or children with autism, it's you've got this structure and routine in place for them, and then it's just stripped away. And that was gut-wrenching for us. So what they must have felt like when it was like, oh, by the way, school is going to be shut for the majority of students on Monday, and you might not be a student that's going to come. That was horrible to have to explain to some of them in the classroom. But they've been resolute from the start, and I think, they really just took it on the chin and just went along with it, and that was incredible to see them being able to do that. Like I say, stripping away the structure and routine that they had already. And such a structure. Like, they knew exactly what was happening, and we always adapt to the changes when we can. But this was, what a change to be able to deal with. Unreal.
Yeah, like, just pulled the rug out, didn't it, from beneath our feet. I think the key thing is that the foundation of all of it, with the helping the children understand and the family, was that I think as a Birchwood community, we've got really good relationships.
Yeah.
And we've got relationships where of trust. So that was a double-edged sword, I guess, because our students and our families trust us. So they trust us to make the right decision. And when we make that decision, they will go with us on it and they will support us. But the responsibility of the decisions that we were all having to make really felt unbearable at times, because the decisions that we were making were based on the interpretation of this information that was coming, like Amy said, through a television broadcast. And, you know, I remember those broadcasts would happen and then I'd sit down at my desk and think, well, I need to interpret this for the families. I need to say, what has just been said by the government mean to our families at Birchwood and to our staff at Birchwood? What does it, you know, all of our staff will have heard that this is really dangerous. All of the families will have heard that. The children, some of them will have heard that. How do I make sense of that for what it means actually on the ground for them in their daily existence? And I think it was the beginning of that week long of just writing quite lengthy letters that then were posted on Facebook to the families. And sometimes they got posted quite late because it took such a long time to absorb and then interpret, but then put it out there. And I think the families really appreciated that. Certainly the responses we got about that, those communications were really, really positive. But just kind of from a really personal point of view, I think I found them quite cathartic. I think I found them like therapy for myself, because as I was writing about it and putting it on paper to them, or on Facebook to them, it was sort of allowing me to try and document and make sense of it myself. But then the responsibility of that, and the fact that people were referencing that as, this is what's going to happen next, and this is how we're going to explain it to our families, that responsibility was huge. And I guess in some ways it was making sure the parents understood so that the children could understand. But I think the equal responsibility, or maybe I've never felt such a huge responsibility to staff.
Yeah.
Because our staff give everything, don't they? They're so committed. You know, they do put school often before their own families. The idea that I might put a foot wrong and put a member of staff at risk and almost kind of like let them down in making the wrong decision. So I think at that point we decided as a team that if staff felt that for their family, the right thing to do was for them to stay at home and observe the, you know, the isolation and the social distancing that was being recommended, then that's what they needed to do. And I think we all tried really hard not to make anyone feel like they needed to keep coming in that first few weeks when there was a real fear about the dangers of being out and about.
Yeah.
But I think some of those communications, Roz, that you talk about, you know, so the letters that you were writing and the things that you were posting on Facebook, I think for lots of our families and lots of our staff, they were really important, because we were getting, there was quite a lot of mixed messages. There was quite a lot of guidance that was unclear, or different things from different media outlets, and then including the daily briefings. And what you were doing almost at times when I felt overwhelmed by some of that and by so many different voices and so much lack of clarity, that in your reflections and then the things that you were putting out, I know that for some of the families I spoke to, they were allowing that to be the one piece of guidance and advice that they were listening to, as opposed to having so many different comments and voices and so many mixed messages. They were relying on that bit of clarity, and I think that clear guidance and leadership during those times of real uncertainty. And I do totally appreciate how difficult, albeit cathartic, writing that communication with parents was. But I think it was absolutely crucial at those times when people were desperately wanting someone to lead, to give advice and guidelines and piece together some of that puzzle that was so jumbled. I think it was really important that communication, and families, you know, really appreciated that.
On the ground level, as a teacher at the school, and obviously working closely with support staff, other teachers, I think it was something that everybody needed. Like Amy said, it's as much as it was cathartic for you, that information that supported everybody to kind of come away and go, okay, that's the next step. because I don't think anybody knew what to do. And it needed somebody to lead the way and say, this is what we're going to do. This is how it is. And I've got, and somebody's got to make those decisions. And I think when you look at sort of the Facebook comments and how many likes and love hearts it got, and that wasn't just from staff, that was mainly parents. And it just kind of showed straight from the start that people appreciated what you were doing and understood that it was such a difficult decision to make and a hard road that we were taking. But they had somebody to be able to go, this is what we're going to do, and we're with you all the way. It's basically like somebody holding your hand, wasn't it, crossing the road. It was like a right thing to do, to bring everybody together and go, this is what we need to do, and this is how it is. And when you had that government guidelines, not to be too political, it was a puzzle. There were some things there that you kind of heard at the weekend, and then it was, oh, how do we go about that then? And for you to be able to sort of, with the SLT team, sit down and go, okay, this is the puzzle, put the pieces together, this is what we've got. There might be a few pieces missing, but this is what we've got at the minute. And I think that was, it was appreciated by everybody on ground level, all teachers, all support staff, and all the emails, all the Facebook shares. It was leadership at its finest. It really was.
You can only do that. You can only lead like that when you've got a great team of people around you and a great community. And, you know, I guess to bring it to a positive, that as difficult as everything has been, as sad and as hard as it has been to work my way through it all with you guys, it's really shown the best of Birchwood, isn't it? And there's been moments of just beautiful moments, really, of people coming together, of supporting each other. And in so many ways, amongst all the horror of it, we've seen some of the best of all of our staff and the best of the children and our families. And I think that's probably been a bit of a national kind of sense, hasn't it? And in amongst all of the really bad things that have happened, even nationally, we've seen that it's brought out some of the best in people. And I think that's definitely provided that light and, you know, all the rainbows. It's a good analogy. It's made me feel even more devoted and committed to getting the best deal for us all here. So thinking about that last day, the Friday, the numbers of children in school had dwindled right down. I think we had something like 60% attendance.
Yeah.
We'd had all the returns back. We knew the children that we were going to see on the following Monday, and we knew that the ones we weren't going to see.
Lots of our young people, especially within the EYFS and Key Stage 1 classes, it is families that are coming and dropping off those children. So every day, teaching staff and us as SLT get back, you know, twice daily contact with those families who of course we know ordinarily that at that moment in each morning, what those parents and carers are doing is handing over the most precious thing in the whole wide world to them, and what a privilege it is for us to accept those young people, you know, into the school. And on that day, for those parents that were still making what was, I mean, I think our parents have made some of the most ridiculously difficult decisions about as and when during that week before, and having those conversations on the door with parents about them having real conflict about should they be bringing their little one on that day, and us trying to obviously offer the reassurance that by then we were doing everything we possibly could, but knowing in that handover that we didn't know necessarily when we said goodbye on that Friday, when we were going to physically meet again. And that was so hard. I mean, Robbie, you referred to that sort of structure and routine that we know is so important for all our young people, but it becomes part of, you know, it's made me realize how integral it is to my life, that the structures and routines. And that's very much how, you know, what keeps me going. And during this time was not being able to even say, and on this day it will finish, and at this time things will, you know, not being able to do that. So that saying goodbye to parents, and then of course those parents that were upset, and I was upset, and what you would ordinarily want to do with when someone was upset in terms of that physical contact, that physical reassurance, we were stood at 2 meters, you know, we were already stood at a distance there trying to have those conversations. It was a tricky time. A tricky last day. And as we have seen, you know, during this time, and hopefully looking forward, because it's ultimately, you know, the goal, just looking forward to being able to see those families again. And as we have done bit by bit, it's been just joyous. Yeah. Makes you appreciate that all the more.
Definitely. Yeah, I just have this memory of it got to the end of the day and it was a bit I was dreading. All the children by that point had been told, they'd had some social stories. We were saying goodbye to the parents, and they had, some of the parents just had a look of real fear in their eyes as to how were they going to manage to provide all that specialist support and therapeutic input that a special school gives. How are they going to be able to provide that for their child, and how long would they have to do it for? And not being able to tell them, not being able to say anything other than, you know, we will be in touch, we will let you know as soon as we know anything different. Some of the children were crying, and I felt like I'd made a decision that was hurting them, and that was hard. And then just walking around and seeing the empty, that like when they'd all gone, seeing the empty classrooms and staff being tearful, and just driving off that night thinking, have we done enough? Have we done enough to keep them safe? Have we done enough to safeguard them all? And just not knowing, not knowing whether it was enough, and not knowing what was going to happen next. It was probably the worst day of my whole career, without a doubt. I felt completely unable to do the job I was paid to do and the job I loved. And I felt like, it sounds really pathetic, but I felt like somebody had taken our school away from us. It had been taken away from all of us by this virus, and I knew what that meant for so many of our families.
But it hasn't taken our school away, and actually, you know, what we've talked about earlier in terms of right from the beginning, then our staff and our parents and our young people, you know, we have provided, we haven't disappeared. Our school has changed, and the way that we've conducted learning and the way that we've been in touch with young people is different, but it hasn't disappeared. Yeah. We've adapted and changed, and under these really tricky circumstances, I do think that ultimately there is that positive that we'll be stronger for it, because we've seen each other through this. It's that quote that I use all the time about those that have suffered together have stronger connections than those who live most content. And we've been through something harrowing, but as and when we come through that, that connection will make us stronger as work colleagues, as our relationships with parents, our relationships with young people. You know, teachers have talked about through some of those communications and teaching that's happened, and home learning and Zoom teaching, that there's been some fantastic, you know, that relationships have actually managed to blossom. And I think it's important that we hold on, you know, that now upon reflection, we see that what we thought could beat us and that our school was being taken away, that no, that we reclaimed that straight away and adapted in the way that we have.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. We have reclaimed, like reclaimed it, yeah, from the coronavirus.
It could have been easily lost.
Yeah. So what's been the best point so far in all of this? What's been that little shining moment for you guys within this sort of strange period between March and June? What's been the glimmer? What's been the gold?
There's been a few moments, but I think specifically for me, walking back into a classroom with students that you haven't probably taught for 2 years, or students that you've never taught before, and them just coming together and just being accepting of you as a person. And I think that's the main thing for me, that I was personally really concerned that I was going to be teaching students that I didn't have a clue about, I needed to read up on them. Maybe I didn't have time. But yeah, just for them to be able to combine and mix together and show that, especially the students that I've worked with over the last few years, to be able to be accepting of others, I think it's been really lovely. It's been sort of a shining light for me, and that it's not specifically about the staff or the teachers or whatever. It's the students that have just kind of been the people that have held it together for me, where they're just coming in as acting as if nothing's happened. And that's been really nice, just to come in and go, okay, I'm wearing, like, we've been lucky enough to get PPE, so but wearing PPE and then just coming up and having a good look at you and going, all right, carry on, just pretend it's normal. And that's been really nice. It's been comforting to come back into work when I have done and be able to just kind of get on with it and pretend that everything's okay and pretend everything's normal in your, what we call, social little bubble. And that's been really nice. And obviously to get out of the house a bit, that's been wonderful with two young children.
Amy, what have you thought of yours?
It's difficult, really. It was a bit of a big question, I guess. I found some of the things that we've put together on, and the videos that have been made kind of on Facebook and our virtual assemblies that have been happening more recently, but watching some of those things, because obviously you might play a little part in a video or if we're creating a song or sharing work, but then when that all gets pieced together and you see those young people that now you know you've not actually properly seen for weeks, but they're engaging in something at home and creating wonderful bits of artwork and are outside on a Thursday night clapping and have decorated their windows and are leaving messages for their friends and staff. So some of those things have just been wonderful. And I think what Robbie's talked about, just being amazed by, that makes me quite emotional, but the resilience of our young people. So things like Robbie talking about the PPE and the, again, as adults, what the decision to that you needed to make, Roz, in terms of keeping staff and young people safe for us to be wearing PPE, but then the realization of that, and as the PPE came in and we were looking at staff wearing aprons and gloves and face masks and things like that, and it just absolutely breaking my heart, and me thinking, well, you know, and then thinking that how are the young people ever going to manage with this and cope with this, especially those that, you know, with communication and interaction differences that we know that really look to our faces, really look to our mouths to understand and to read what it is that's happening. And suddenly that was being taken away from the mask, and then kept going away and me catastrophizing that means that that the relationships are going to break and it's not going to be okay. And then coming in, and do you know what? Those resilient, wonderful, amazing, super young people that have started, and the staff that I now know, I'd never noticed what happens to someone's eyes when they smile. And now we're so in tune to that, and the young people are getting into tune to that people are smiling with their eyes, and us finding the children finding new and different ways to express and communicate. They're just awesome. And I think that's a bit of a waffly answer to your question, Roz, but
no, that's great. I've loved hearing all of the things that you guys have said. It brings a proper smile to my face. And yeah.
And your eyes.
And
smile to your eyes.
Okay. I think we'll end on those positives because they're great places to end. And in our next meeting, our next podcast, we will talk a little bit more about PPE and also the struggles that some of the families might have faced at home and what special school means to those families in a bit more detail. But for now, thanks, guys. Bye.
Thanks, Ross. See you, Robbie.
Right, thank you. See ya. Bye.